Hello and welcome back to Surgery 101, brought to you with the help of the Department of Surgery at the University of Alberta. We're available on the iTunes Music Store, at surgery101.org, on MedEd Portal, and also at the Canadian Healthcare Education Commons. In this episode, Dr. Steve Meyer brings us our first podcast on cardiac surgery. He'll be addressing the topic of cardiac transplantation, reviewing some of the relevant epidemiology, listing the indications for transplant, and considering selection criteria for recipients and donors. He'll also be discussing some of the possible post-operative complications and looking at long-term outcomes of heart transplant. So, let's get ready to get down to the heart of the matter here on Surgery 101.
Cardiac transplantation has been an area of interest for the past century, but really only the first heart transplantation was performed in 1967 in South Africa. And since then, many great strides have been made on the technical side, and most importantly, with respect to improvements in immunosuppression. Cardiac transplantation is performed for patients with end-stage heart failure. Epidemiology from the United States suggests that there's a prevalence of 5 million patients in the United States with heart failure. There's another 500,000 patients diagnosed each year with heart failure, and this results in about 1 million hospitalizations in the United States each year. In fact, this is the most common reason for hospitalization for patients over the age of 65. Given that in Canada we have a population that's one-tenth that of the United States, you can divide those numbers by 10. As far as transplant volume, there's approximately 150 to 200 heart transplants performed in Canada each year. At the University of Alberta, we perform between 20 and 50 heart transplants per year, with the average being approximately 35 to 40 per year. Approximately one-third of those are in patients under the age of 18. The indications for heart transplantation are systolic heart failure, ischemic heart disease, intractable arrhythmias, congenital heart disease, and more, less commonly, hypertrophic cardiomyopathy. By far, the two most common indications for heart transplantation are ischemic cardiomyopathy due to end-stage coronary disease and dilated cardiomyopathy, which is usually idiopathic. Occasionally, we'll perform heart transplantation for patients with intractable angina for which there's no suitable other surgical or medical therapy. And with increasing success in congenital heart disease, more and more patients are living longer, but eventually many of these patients do or will require heart transplantation due to their congenital heart disease. Not surprisingly, recipients for heart transplantation are very carefully selected, and there are a number of absolute and relative contraindications. The most common absolute contraindications are advanced age, and this varies from center to center, and must take into consideration the patient's physiologic age, but typically, most patients over the age of 70 are not considered for heart transplantation. Fixed pulmonary hypertension is one of the most important contraindications, with a measured pulmonary vascular resistance of greater than 5 Woods units, or a transpulmonary gradient of greater than 15 millimeters of mercury. This is particularly relevant because if the patient has fixed pulmonary hypertension, the newly transplanted heart's right ventricle will not be able to cope with this pulmonary hypertension, and that the new donor heart will struggle with right ventricular failure. Other absolute contraindications include systemic illnesses that would limit survival after transplantation, especially in the face of immunosuppression, including malignancies, HIV, and any other systemic process with a high probability of recurrence in the transplanted heart. There's obviously many potential relative contraindications, including recent malignancy and modest disease in other end organs, including lungs, kidneys, and liver. Postoperative course and long-term follow-up of these patients is complex, and importantly, a suitable social support network is critical for these patients and is a big part of the preoperative evaluation. So the workup process usually takes weeks to months, depending on the patient's acuity and the necessity of expediting the process. The timing of transplantation depends on a number of factors, which I alluded to before, but also on the availability of organs. Some patients will receive an organ within 2 days, and some patients will wait over a year to receive a suitable organ. Consideration of the cardiac donor is important for many physicians, not just transplant physicians, as there is a limited supply of organs, and an awareness of cardiac donation by physicians caring for critically ill patients is important to initiate the process for donor allocation. When we're looking at appropriate cardiac donors, most importantly, brain death must be confirmed and the family approached to consider organ donation. Suggested criteria for cardiac donors is age less than 55 and the absence of any factors which may affect the donor heart, including prolonged cardiac arrest, pre-existing cardiac disease, severe chest trauma, and positive serology for HIV, hepatitis B, or hepatitis C. When we are attempting to match donors and recipients, we look at many variables, including blood type, age, potential infectious risks in the donor, which takes into consideration high-risk activities, ventricular function, ischemia time, meaning how long the organ will need to be transported to the recipient hospital, and hemodynamic stability. One of the most important things in matching patients is the blood groups. Although there's been recent advances in the neonatal population with ABO blood group incompatible transplants, ABO blood grouping and appropriate matching of donors and recipients is still critical in the adult population. Once an appropriate donor has been identified, donors are allocated based on the priority of the recipient, meaning how sick the recipient is, blood groups, the geographic distance between the donor and the recipient, which can affect how long the donor heart must be out of the body without a blood supply, and lastly, time on the wait list for the recipient. The standard immunosuppression regimen for most patients after heart transplantation is a combination of steroids, cyclosporine or tacrolimus, and azathioprine, or more commonly, mycophenolate mofetil. After the transplantation has been performed, there's obviously many potential complications, which reflect the balance between immunosuppression to prevent the donor heart rejection and the complications of rejection itself. Postoperative complications are divided between those related to the heart itself, including rejection and the development of transplant coronary disease, versus the non-cardiac complications, which mainly are the result of long-term immunosuppression, including kidney failure, hypertension, osteoporosis due to long-term steroid use, hyperlipidemia, malignancy, and infection. One of our biggest concerns in the early postoperative period is early rejection, for which the patient undergoes multiple biopsies, which are reduced in frequency with time from surgery. The long-term consequences of rejection are transplant coronary disease, is the development of diffuse atherosclerotic lesions throughout the coronary circulation. And this is the major limitation of heart transplantation. One of the other major complications of immunosuppression is infection, with bacterial infections being most common in the early perioperative period, followed by viral infections in the subacute period, followed by fungal infections in the long-term period, typically described as greater than 6 months after surgery. Despite all these complications, the patients that do receive heart transplantation in general experience improved quantity and quality of life, with many patients returning to work. The mean half-life for survival after orthotopic heart transplantation is now approximately 11.5 years, meaning that 50% of these patients will still be alive 11 and a half years after their transplant. The family physician, I believe, plays a number of roles in cardiac transplantation. First of all, identifying patients which may benefit from orthotopic heart transplantation. The family physician also plays a role in identifying donors, particularly if they're involved in emergency room care or care in critical care units. The family physician will also be integral to the long-term management of these patients after surgery and should have at least an understanding of the immunosuppressants and other medications that these patients will be on. Heart transplantation patients are carefully and closely monitored by the transplanting hospital, but family physicians will be important to liaison with the transplant clinic.
So let's summarize what you need to remember about heart transplantation. Think about the two most common indications, ischemic cardiomyopathy and dilated cardiomyopathy. Think about how recipients are selected. Remember contraindications such as advanced age, fixed pulmonary hypertension, and systemic illnesses. Think about how donors are selected, preferably under age 55, with a healthy heart and no blood-borne diseases. Think about the three most common sorts of complications: infection, rejection, and the complications of immunosuppression. Lastly, remember the incredible difference that heart transplantation makes to people's lives, with 50% of recipients still being alive 11 years after the surgery. That's all we have time for this time around on Surgery 101. In fact, this is our last broadcast of 2010, so we'd like to wish all of our listeners a very peaceful and prosperous new year. We will, of course, be back in 2011, bringing you new topics in new ways with a range of new speakers. As usual, if you have any questions or comments for us, you can email us at surgerypodcast@gmail.com or leave a message at surgery101.org. Thanks for listening, and we look forward to seeing you again next year here on Surgery 101.